everyone. This is Scott Weiger from Bates, and thank you for joining us today for our webinar with Lessons Learned from Our Certified Partners. This is one of our quarterly XPI Community of Practice webinars that we hold every 3 months. And I was saying to some of our certified partners today that there's a new theme going on with these webinars. I think in the early days of moderating and leading these webinars, our premise was, well, at Bates, we know a whole lot about the XPI, or at least more than other people do, so we're going to take the lead in sharing our expertise. And that's really changing now. We have a growing number. Believe it or not, we're now over 100 certified partners, and that's not even counting a group. I'm doing a group in the London area in late July. So our community is growing all the time, and as our community grows in size, it also grows in experience. So what we want to start doing more frequently on these webinars every quarter is showcase some of the knowledge and wisdom that we have among your peers and find out what they're learning through their experience as certified partners. So on that note, I want to welcome our special guest today. Joining us all the way from Copenhagen, Denmark, we have the husband and wife consulting team of Halvor and Lena Holter. So they were in our very first certification cohort. I think I was a good, over a year and a half ago now. And they've been among our most successful certified partners so far, have delivered quite a few orientation and insight calls and meetings, and also done a number of group and team programs. So, and they're actually, we did our first certification program outside of the U.S. with them a few months ago in Copenhagen. So, so Halvor and Lena, welcome to our broadcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
And on top of that, we have the United States well represented. We have Anna Holtzclaw and Linda Bailey joining us. Now, Anna and Linda were in our December cohort, and I know we have some others on the call here today from that group as well. And Anna and Linda hit the ground running and managed to take the XPI to an existing client. And very quickly, we were able to do, I think, a couple dozen XPI assessments with an existing client with the help of one of the certified partners they met at the December program. So, Linda and Anna, welcome. Glad to have you here today. And just say hello to the folks for us.
Hello. Hello. We're glad to be on. Excited to learn from you all what you've been doing.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a good opportunity. And, you know, we are kind of showcasing these four today, but by the same token, we have other folks on the phone as well who have their own background and experiences. So we're going to have a pretty informal discussion together in our hour or so together today. We have a few general topics we intend to hit, but we're also pretty game to go wherever people want to go in terms of the conversation or if people want to share their own experiences. So I just say what we're going to do is we're going to keep our panelists unmuted here today. But if you are listening in, I would just say to click on that raise hand icon that you might see there, or if it's more comfortable for you, if you're not in a quiet place, you can also free to type in some questions in the questions pane there as well. Yeah, because if you can be unmuted, we can unmute you when the time comes and give you an opportunity to weigh in. So that's how we'll do that. So we'll cover a few topics, but feel free to interrupt, ask some questions, and we'll be happy to go where we're going. So just a very general overview of what we're going to do today. I'm going to ask our panelists to reflect a little bit, kind of turn back the clock there. You know, if you remember the movie Back to the Future, where you had to jump in that DeLorean time machine and go back to a certain date and time. Maybe if these folks could go back to, you know, maybe when they were just getting certified at that time, what are maybe some things that they're glad that they did since that time, and maybe some things that they might do differently if they could do it all over again and accelerate their progress. And then we're going to have them share a little bit of stories of how they've used the XPI in practice with folks, and whether it's just delivering the O&I calls, how that's gone for them, whether they've been able to use it to solve business problems, how they've maybe either, in some cases, used the XPI to connect with new prospects and clients, or in other cases, use it with existing clients to see if there's new ways they can bring value to the equation. And like I said, along the way, we're going to be answering some questions from the audience about business development and O&I calls, and just how do you coach to it? Maybe once you've done the O&I calls, if you have ongoing engagements, how has that worked out for folks? But these are really just some suggested topics, and again, we can go really wherever people want to go. So let me just put the faces back up here so you can be reminded of who's talking. I'm going to kick it over to Halvor and Lena first a little bit. If you could maybe turn back the clock and think to your beginning. It's been a little while for you now, Halvor and Lena. What do you think you've done? You've been very successful. First off, what do you think has really led to your great success in using the XPI in your practice? And we'll start with that.
I think that when it comes to, you know, creating interest and establishing relationships and interest with potential clients, is that we have purely actually been focusing on the XPI in the sales process to create a strong executive presence development brand and using the XPI as the foundation for that. Mm. So being able to be that also first mover in the market and having this new exciting tool only and also the only scientifically based, research based tool has been a focus on our behalf. Mm.
So to us, it's been very important to create that brand of being the ones that work with executive presence. And I think something that's we still do other things as well, but when we have client meetings and when we call prospects, we only talk about the executive presence and how we can help people develop their executives using the XPI. So I think that clear focus for us has been very successful.
So it sounds like you're using the XPI as sort of the primary lever to use to understand and move the understand leadership development and move the needle for it for people. Is that fair?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, being a phenomena that is, you know, well known, obviously in the States and other parts of the world, there's some big companies here in the Nordics as well that is familiar with the phenomena, but it's not that well. Mm. Not that well known. Mm. So we also have a job to do in terms of making people aware of the importance of it and actually, you know, explaining a little bit, maybe introduce the term into their vocabulary almost.
So you could say that once we got back after being certified and we were starting applying this in our market, we kind of had to like go two steps backward. And we kind of had to, you know, start asking, so do you know executive presence? What do you know about it? What do you think of when you think of executive presence? So we spent a lot of time working on creating, you know, like a script or creating that line of sight in our in our selling to clients. So we kind of had to go back and say, so why is executive presence important when working with executives, and why is that something you would want to have with your executives, and how can we then help you? So we put a lot of time in creating a good script for how we're going to present the whole thing.
That's really interesting. We're going to want to come back to you and get some more specifics on what that looks like and sounds like for sure. Mm-hmm. But I want to right now kick it over to Anna and Linda. And, you know, you have a great story too. I think for a number of certified partners, it's taken a little while to maybe get that first few assessments under your belt and to get things rolling. So I was really just wowed with, I think, within a month or so of the December program, you know, we got the word that you were going ahead with, I don't know, 20-something assessments, as I recall. So talk a little bit about how your experience has been, Anna and Linda, with the XPI and how you've managed to get rolling so quickly.
Well, actually, Anna and I were working on a course for a client's communications department on being able to have a seat at the table. And we had been studying the subject for a couple of years and had begun to develop a curriculum when we learned about the Bates EXPI. And once we were certified, we kind of went backwards and made the EXPI pretty much the centerpiece of quantifying what this is. But this is probably, I would say, the centerpiece of a 7-module course that we had already been working on for a couple of years. And we just piloted that course for the first time this spring. And the client's very satisfied. In fact, we met with them yesterday and are probably going to do 2 more courses in the 6 to 8 months. But it was, we were thrilled to find something that could that was reliable, that could really quantify what everybody seems to have trouble even defining. But we add a lot of different components. You ask about Mark. We met Mark Hecht in Boston at the certification program. And we brought him in to help us with a whole day on emotional intelligence. And then we all brought him back in to help us do the one-on-ones around the assessment, because we had 24 people in our class. Mm. So we divided those by 3 and brought Mark in to do a third of those for us. So we just wrapped up this program. We started the program in January. Again, it's a 7-module program, and we just wrapped it up the end of May. So that's kind of our context, a little bit different. So it's primarily, you know, we were charged with developing something for a client. So it wasn't like we were out selling it. And we just, you know, in all of our research, read the Kathy Bates book and thought, well, gee, this is great. So we were skating fast because we'd already, as I said, begun to lock in on some curriculum that we basically redesigned once we came to Boston and had this.
I think the other thing that we're doing that is a little bit different as well is approaching it from a team perspective. So I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but for instance, when we have the first call with the clients, we do that as a group. So the 24 of them get their assessments back at the same time, and we sort of orient them and introduce the assessment to them as a group and sort of give them their charge from that, and then come back and do the one-on-one calls with them later. So that was a sort of different dynamic, and there was some work that went into structuring that to be able to deliver in a team setting that was different for us as well.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's good to know. And certainly, yeah, we will get deeper into the groups and teams part of the discussion, because Halvor and Lena have some interesting work with groups and teams as well. So it's interesting. One theme I'm already hearing from both pairs of you here is a theme of maybe going backwards to go forwards. I think both Lena and Linda used that term of going backwards. Lena kind of going back and kind of bringing back the conversation a little bit, to kind of retrofit the idea of how can we incorporate executive presence into this. And then it sounds like same thing with Linda was talking about, kind of retrofitting the XPI into an already well underway leadership to development curriculum. So that's kind of an interesting thing. So that's an interesting theme, is finding a way you can integrate the XPI into a lot of the great things that you're already doing as consultants. So that's something that just struck me as you were saying that. Getting back to the question, maybe we'll go back to Denmark on this one. What are some things that you're really glad that you did? And then for those listening who are maybe a little newer to the conversation as certified partners, what are some things that if you could do it over again, you might do differently? What are some thoughts from Halvor and Lena first, and then we'll ask Linda and Anna the same question.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when it comes to what we're glad that we did when starting out was, making sure that we had a thorough preparation before giving the O&I calls, and therefore, you know, being able to deepen our knowledge about the XPI using the material available, using the book, development guide, guides from the certification binder, and you know, reading up and preparing ourselves quite extensively.
And I would say that we it wasn't that great of a business in the beginning, because we would spend a lot of hours preparing for just one feedback. And actually, I still use at least 2 hours, if not more, for preparing for feedback. But I truly believe that it's really good, because you get that feeling that you're kind of the profile, whatever question they're going to ask, you can answer, and you can just show up for that inside meeting very differently when you feel to know the profile and you know the model in your sleep almost.
I think that's a terrific point, Lena. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I'm certainly a lot more efficient now that I've done a couple hundred of them, but I think you're absolutely right. You're going to have those calls where the leader is just stumped, right? They just don't know. You ask them, well, why do you think this perception may exist about your ability to appreciate nonverbals? Like, I don't know. And if you're not really deep into understanding what's in there in the open-ended comments, for example, you can really be in trouble, versus if you know, like, well, gee, there was this comment here about, always seems to be on his phone in meetings. Do you think that, may have something to do with it? So you're never going to use all the things that I think, in the prep process, but it's really valuable to kind of have that up your sleeve. So what I think I'll do is, instead of having anything you would do differently, let's go to Linda and Anna and have you talk about what have you done so far that you're glad you've done and that's worked well for you? And then we'll come back to all four of you on what you might do differently or what you'd recommend to folks.
Scott, I think that for us, one of the things that was really beneficial, and we certainly didn't, is just sort of the benefit of our partnership, and the Denmark team, I'm sure, has the same benefit going for them, is that it was really nice the first go around to have somebody else who had been through the class with me. And so when we first got, our series of results back from the participants in the class, we were able to talk about them with each other and bounce ideas. And it really helped us, I think, deepen our knowledge and understanding of the assessment. We did that with Mark as well. And so I think, my advice would be find somebody in your class that may be willing to do that with you, that you could share results of a client with and have someone that you could discuss and process that with, because that was incredibly helpful to me, I think, in terms of the speed in which I could sort of pick up and understand the assessment, what I was doing. And then the other thing that occurred to me too is just a very, again, this sort of ended up happening organically. As Linda said, we were delivering these. So we delivered the results of, I did 8 one-on-ones in a 72-hour period, which was a lot.
Oh, that's more than I've ever done.
Yeah, well, we all did. I mean, Linda and actually Mark did four in one day and 4 the next day.
Wow.
Even more stress. But one of the things that I found myself saying by the time I got to sort of the third or fourth one is that I realized that a lot of the clients were coming to the table and there was some angst over their results.
Sure.
And so I found myself sort of saying, before we, let me tell you the story of this person when I read this assessment, because these were not people at the time that I didn't have long-term relationships with. It was fairly new in me meeting them. But that sort of telling the story and being able to highlight the strengths and how things were backed up. And I sort of told them the story that the assessment does, and then said, does that story resonate with you? And without exception, everybody was like, yes, that's my story. And it immediately sort of opened up a dialogue in a different way, I think, that was really helpful and powerful in my one-on-one sessions.
And you did that at the beginning of the insights call?
No, because remember, our insights call was done as a group.
We didn't do that call because we had
24 people. So the way ours got delivered is at the end of the second day of curriculum, as Linda mentioned, as a group with 24 people in the room, we handed back their XPIs and sort of told them, educated them on how to walk through it, how to read it, what to look for, what were the signals there, and then in the weeks after that, scheduled these one-on-one meetings. I will say a mistake we made is on that first go around is there was too big a gap between giving the results back and scheduling those one-on-ones. There was two or three weeks between some of the meetings. And those people had great angst.
If we'd had
the one-on-ones much sooner after that, we could have reduced some anxiety for some of the clients that were dealing with some feedback that they were unsure about.
Yeah, we've certainly made that same mistake. And it can depend. If somebody's feeling pretty good about their results, then they can be pretty chill about having to wait a little while to have the conversations. But as you say, there's usually at least some anxiety, and sometimes, you know, great anxiety or anger or any number of other things. So, yeah, I think we found it's a good best practice. Ideally, no more than a week between, you know, getting the report and then really digging through it, I'd say. So that's definitely a good learning to share. So that's digging a little bit into maybe what we would do differently. How, Marlena, you know, if you could rewind the clock, you know, are there any things that you would do a little differently as you reflect on your experience, ways you could have maybe accelerated your progress faster or anything like that?
Well, I guess in hindsight, you know, there are things that, you know, you would like to adjust, but I think, you know, overall, I don't think we would do any major changes. I think that, you know, the pressure preparation that we now have for the both for the old calls and insights call is less time consuming, as we know the assessments better and can see threads and all the connections between certain, you know, item pairs. So I think that, you know, basically I think we would do the same again. And I think that it was, you know, initially well invested time to have us, you know, have the preparation and have as many, you know, assessments as possible.
Mm. One of the things we would recommend is to make sure that the leader has a sufficient time for preparation, and also to stress the importance of them doing their preparation and then sending it to you before the inside call. So we learned that when leaders are well prepared, when they really had a look and really, and the feedback we get is that most leaders, they actually spend more than that 1.5 hour. We kind of estimate them, some spend like 2 or 3 hours. And once they do that, you know, it's a very different conversation you can have with them when they're prepared.
Yeah. Your audio cut out a little bit there, Lena, but I think we got your main point that, you know, what I heard was that, you know, you got to make sure leaders invest the time and energy and really come into that insights conversation, that one-on-one conversation, having, you know, really done some due diligence of digging into the report. And we found the same thing. We've even at times rescheduled the call or rescheduled the meeting. We're pretty insistent on having the developmental summary worksheet done. There's rare circumstances when we've plowed ahead without it, but I think sometimes leaders come into this process expecting that you're just going to talk at them for an hour and kind of tell them what they should take away from the report. And as you all know, that's not how it works. So I also think in that front, it helps to get it, you know, lingering on that developmental summary worksheet during the orientation call or meeting also can help with that, to make sure they kind of know what they should be giving you.
Exactly. Yeah. So sort of stressing that, the importance of that. And I think that, you know, in addition to that, Scott, I think one of the learnings that we've taken is that, you know, to really focus sharp on to relate the insights call to the business context that we have been talking about in the orientation call. So the value in being able to relate the two.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I've actually become even more aggressive about this in my old age now that I'm a ways into doing this. And sometimes I'll say something to somebody, so, you know, such and such was your lowest rated facet or lowest rated item with this group. Does it matter? And, you know, because if you think it doesn't matter, then maybe we shouldn't talk about it. Maybe we should talk about something else. But, you know, I might put it a little different way. So given that you told me that your number one goal is to show up as a trusted advisor and strategic partner to outside customers, you know, is this item something you think matters in terms of that? And, you know, usually they'll say yes, sometimes they'll say no, but that I think then the person has, feels like they have some reason to work on this rather than, because we when we've had groups that we've coached with the XPI over time, sometimes we've had them say, well, yeah, I guess it would be nice to get all fours and fives instead of like threes and fours, but convince me why I should care about that. And that can be a bit of a process sometimes for leaders to see that. So I'd love to have you guys share some stories. Maybe we'll start with Linda and Anna on this one. Maybe tell us a story about a one-on-one conversation you had with somebody about their results that you thought was particularly powerful or relevant or interesting. Just a case where you really taught you something about how to do this. It taught you something about executive presence or the tool. Just I'd love to hear from any of you any stories you have about an experience with a leader that brought home to you, you know, how to use the instrument and what the how the instrument really works most effectively. So anything you can think of, Linda and Anna, just to put you on the spot for a moment?
We're both sort of racking our brains on that one right now for a specific example.
Yeah, when do we do this in February? Yeah. maybe well, come I, back. But one thing yeah, I wanted, back to one thing I wanted yeah, to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
About the process and what was really helpful was using the constellation. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when you see the whole and use the red dots, we used, you know, the dot process on the constellation and gave each of them the constellation, that gives you the bigger framework. And, you know, we're not experienced enough in combinations, but once we saw the combination ourselves, it gave us something to think about. And because this is low, you know, if authenticity seems to be low, for example, it may have something to do with something else, that you don't have enough confidence or anyway, being able to see the bigger picture to talk from that, I found to be very helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think we do have, go ahead. You know, I guess I can't think of a specific story, but people seem to worry about things they can't do anything about, and trying to get them to focus on things that they can do something about always seemed to be an underlying thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I think is one thing I've come to believe is if people seem kind of stuck, that's where I often go is to the obstacles. Like, okay, maybe you're not sure why your practical wisdom scores are so low, but let's kind of talk about, well, what might get in the way of you being seen as being able to cut through complexity or ask the right questions or be a step or two ahead? What's getting in the way of that? And then to your point, what can we do something about it? And what are things we maybe can't change? You know, you've got a real difficult boss and we probably can't change that, but are there other things we can change about that? So that can be a good way, I think, to have at helping people with that kind of a challenge or situation. I want to mention go ahead.
That combined with what you've said is that, you know, it has to be something they can get some energy behind. Because if they don't care enough, it's not going to matter anyway. So which of these things do they feel most compelled to change?
You know, you also mentioned, Linda, the constellations and how helpful they are. I, as a little bit of an aside here, some good news. I think within a couple months at most, we expect to have a revised version of the user guide coming out where some of the data will automatically be plugged in so people won't have to spend so much time figuring out, well, what were my five highest and what were my five lowest? But we're also planning to even have a constellation of the highest and lowest rated facets circled on a new page within the user guide. So you and the leader will be able to see that right off the bat. We think that'll be helpful.
I think that would be extremely helpful. That's great news.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're just kind of transitioning over to a new report provider, and that's very much in the works. And I kind of drafted up what I wanted in it, and we should have it in hand before too long. How about Halvor and Lena? Any stories coming to mind for you in terms of leaders or groups that were especially memorable, or you really felt the impact, or just that you learned something from going through that with them?
Well, I'm like Linda and Anna. I can't really think of one specific example right now, but one thing that comes to mind is how different the inside feedback can sometimes be. That sometimes it'd be more like, by the script or by the book, and we'll be talking like one facet at a time, like what's the top and what's the lowest, and it'd be very structured and it'd be very helpful. And then other times it'd be more like a loose conversation where you'll be spending time where the energy is and where you can feel the leaders really, this is important to them. And you might spend then quite a lot of time at maybe just one or a few facets. And you might not get through all of them or all the ones that you might have prepared for talking about, and will be just as valuable, if not more valuable, to this leader to have that different kind of conversation. So it's not to say that the one style is better than the other. It's just it strikes me that it's very different, and it can be, both can be very good.
Yeah, one story I've been sharing in certification lately is in the span of a couple days, several months ago, I always ask the same question at the end of the hour in the insights call, which is, so was this valuable to you? And if so, as you reflect on our process and our content today, what was particularly powerful, relevant, interesting, surprising, fill in the blank as you will. And in the span of a couple of days, one person said, well, I really loved the fact that, you never really told me what to think. You just kept asking me questions and kind of pointing me at different data points and having me think about, well, what's going on there and what could I do about it? And you didn't really intervene. You just let me figure it out. And I loved that. So I was like, oh, great. But then the next person I asked, she said, well, I really loved the fact that, I was very stuck and, you didn't force me to just figure it out for myself. You kind of intervened. And when it was obvious that I had no clue as to what was going on or what I could do about it, you didn't just sit on your hands and say, well, it's on you to figure it out. You kind of offered me some hypotheses and you kind of stepped in and became a little more directive and gave me some opinions. And I was really happy you did that. So I think that's a different way of looking at the point Lena was just making, is sometimes you really do need to change or flex your style. And what I'm just describing probably sounds a little not in character for some of you who have a real pure coaching mode, but I think my attitude is when you have sometimes only an hour with people, you want to make sure you get to good outcomes. And if they can get there on their own, I think that's ideal. But sometimes I think you do need to change your approach and be a little bit more directive or offer a bit more to help people get there. And you can create frustration if you don't. But just curious, any reactions to that anyone has? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a deep probing silence there, I guess. You guys can think about that.
Well, I think, in addition to what we've been talking about, Scott, I think that, Lean and I have been working with several teams as well. And I think one of the most powerful moments when using the XPI on the team level, especially for one team, was, them suddenly becoming aware of their collective strengths and challenges, and that they at times overuse their strengths, and that they might have a collective blind spot as well. So having that, that aha moment in terms of, wow, there's probably something that we're overseeing here, or are not paying enough attention to, and people's probably seeing a slightly different than we would like to come across.
And this was especially powerful also because of the timing. This happened to be, we were doing this, it was for an executive team, and they were finishing up their strategy that they were about to launch in a half a year after we did the first workshop with them, and we showed them their team profile, and And it was it became very clear to them that if this is the strategy we're about to launch, and if our organization is to look at this as something that we really mean, then something has got to change, because with our profile, this is not how we have a lot of strong sides that people see, but some of the things that are in our strategy, people don't see that with us. Mm. So we have to change something.
Exactly.
People is to believe that we actually mean this.
So for them to show up as role models supporting the strategy, they needed to do some behavioral adjustments.
Yeah, it's really funny you mentioned this. The article I'm writing for the community for next month, again, sneak preview, is how do you walk a team through their aggregated results and some of the best practices. So I'm not going to go deep into that on this call, especially because I want to open it up to questions shortly here. But I can tell you what you're describing right now. I'm laughing because Andy Atkins, my colleague, I won't use the swear word that he sometimes uses in describing this. What's nice, you talk to the group about getting agreement on what their business imperatives are as a group or team. And then you say the next step might be, okay, so let's look at the model and you tell us which of these facets would seem to matter a whole lot based on what you're trying to drive. And they pick, you know, four or five different ones, which is great. And then you show them their aggregated results. And to change the language somebody, we call that the oh shoot moment. where people look at that and they go, oh shoot, or something else. Like, wow, now we're really concerned because we just identified for ourselves what our business challenges are, what we think is important. And now we look at the results and gee, we just said that collaboration and breaking down silos is really paramount for us right now. And uh-oh, look at those results in inclusiveness. That's not good news. And there's that sort of sinking in or that dawning moment, which is a great bit of self-awareness for the team. And it's also great for us as consultants, right, to have people have that moment and go, oh, boy, okay, Hal Borlino, Linda, Anna, what do we do about this now? How are we going to tackle this? Because that's the nice thing I find with the XPI is we can stop debating whether something really is a significant problem. Your raters and you have just told us what the issue is. We don't have to be the ones to tell you that. And I think that's quite powerful as well.
Yeah, it is.
So at this point, what I'd like to do is encourage people in the audience to just click on the raise your hand button. If you do, I'll unmute you for a moment. Or if you're not comfortable with that, you can just type in a question if you prefer. But I want to use a lot of our remaining time. We certainly can just have a nice chat among us. But I'd like to see if there's questions or things that you'd like to bring on the table to ask our panelists today. So again, I'd encourage you to raise your hand and see if there's something you'd like to ask. We're just keeping an eye on that right now. And I'd love to unmute you and give you a chance to ask our group some questions here. So what questions do we have? It could be anything about how you analyze the reports to how you're having conversations with it, which Alvaro and Lena alluded to earlier. But if you raise your hand or type in a question, we'll use some of our remaining time to field whatever questions you may have. So any questions out there? Anyone? While we're awaiting that, I'll throw the first one out there then, which is for Halvor and Lena, you know, you mentioned early on about bringing it into your client conversations. What ways have you done upfront maybe to get people to realize that you're not selling just an assessment, you're really selling a solution to a business problem? So, because otherwise, a business leader may or may not care that this is the first ever assessment of executive presence. What tactics have you found useful in terms of how you have a conversation, whether it's an existing client or a prospect?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it also depends on whom you are talking to within the organization, whether it is, you know, the executives themselves or if it's, you know, executive HR. but I think to fold out and investigate in terms of, you know, what their challenges are when it comes to talking with HR, it's also about talking about, you know, regarding their current development services for executives and talents, because we're also working on being able to deliver this on talent programs and so forth. So I think that, you know, just a general inquiring interest as to what they're doing at the moment, where their challenges and needs are, and then being asking, listening for cues also related to what could be relevant when it comes to executive presence and XBI. So having that probing, listening approach initially.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Linda and Anna, any thoughts about, obviously you had to broach this conversation with your client, and kind of retrofit this into this. How did you manage to bring up the XBI and what worked for you in that conversation when you're introducing them to the idea?
I think for us, it was really just, quantifying the mystique. And, I think the client was particularly excited that we had found an assessment that would, give us sort of an objective, concrete way of talking about these concepts of executive presence that are ambiguous sometimes and hard to measure. And so that, it was really that quantification, I think, that was exciting for them, and that they were thrilled we had found something that could do that.
Yeah, you have to remember that we had somebody asking us to do it in the first place. So we weren't, as Anna says, I think they were comforted by the fact that we found this assessment, but it wasn't like we were trying to sell them that they needed it. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that can come up sometimes. I think sometimes what I find helpful is to say to people, the XPI process is not about fixing broken leaders. It's really more acknowledging that all of us on our leadership journey, we have things that we've done really well and explain a lot of our successes. And there's always things that we could tweak or improve to be that much stronger. And this is just a way of surfacing stuff that probably isn't going to be a total shock to people, but we can surface things and really drill into specific nuances of behaviors that are going to be helpful to people. So sometimes that's a little reassuring to people as well. Any other questions that people have from the audience? I'd love to get a little bit more audience involvement here. I know a lot of people just enjoy kind of listening in, but would love to hear from anybody on the line in terms of, looks like Lisa may have a question here. Lisa Grego has a comment. She has just a comment. I focus in on the fact that leadership is relentlessly contextual, that one worked in one environment for a leader may not work in another. So equip your leaders and understand context. So that might be good. Would you guys like to comment a little bit on this, react to that, the whole fact that the XBI is contextual? We've talked a little bit about that. And have you run into that when talking to leaders about the fact that their skill set may have served them well, but maybe they need to put some new tools in their toolbox at this current point? Have any of you come up against that in your conversations?
Well, I would say that it's Lina from Denmark, and we would say that it's definitely something that we do run into. And just yesterday, we had two meeting with two different potential clients, both from executive HR, and that was also a topic that we touched in those meetings. How this is that it's not normative. It's not like this is the perfect fit. Because it depends on the organization, and if this is your behavior in this organization, this might suit you well. But if you moved into a different setting, then you would probably have to change something.
Exactly, and I think that also that's also an eye opener, I think, for leaders taking the XBI and getting the feedback. I especially think of one executive, an American, but who was part of a European executive team. And he there was a very, it was a quite eye-opener for him to see, what he thought. He tried to tone down his assertiveness because he thought that would be the right thing to do, whereas his peers would like to see more of his assertiveness. So in that context, that was really aha moment for him to actually understand that, well, I need to actually, tune this up a little bit. I was under the impression that I should have a slightly more careful approach, but definitely the contextual importance of that.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite stories along those lines, I had a guy who got low ratings on the item in humility on accurately and realistically acknowledges his own vulnerabilities. And I said to him, this is kind of weird to me because you seem like you're so self-critical. And he said, and what we finally figured out was his boss thought he was too self-critical, but with his direct reports, he was not really ever acknowledging his vulnerabilities at all. So he was getting low scores from everybody, but for very different reasons from one person to the next. So that was just really fascinating to me. I hadn't seen that happen before. Linda and Anna, any thoughts about things that came up? Like what was the business context for your group of 24 leaders? What were some of the things that were really important in that context in general for that group to drive?
Well, this pilot class that we had was really about managing up. So we certainly emphasize it depends a lot on who it is that you're trying to influence and understanding their style and what they value, any kind of research, talking to others that you can find, while assertiveness is appreciated by one, another might be offended. So always two people in the equation. And I think that what you've already brought up that we see over and over again is overuse. Someone in, you know, especially females in a big corporate environment, and we're dealing with a very big corporation, you know, it's hard for them. They have to be somewhat assertive and have some male tendencies in that way, but are quickly judged at being too assertive, more quickly than probably the males at that. So I think, again, using the constellation, you could kind of tell that someone, it becomes a negative if they're too assertive, that they're too confident. Someone that's too concerned, too inclusive, sometimes is judged as not assertive enough. And we, because this is a dot, a major dot, the biggest dot of dots that we're trying to connect, that, you know, we've got MBTI scores before this, so we're able to kind of look at the EXPI and put it together with automatic behaviors that may not be well managed. And that's been a real benefit, I think, having the MBTI scores ahead of time before we do this piece.
Sure. Yeah, it's funny. You're talking about connecting the dots. And I know you're making me think that there's certain habits that I've just developed. Like I've got the scores of a leader right in front of me, a really amazing woman who's head of a nonprofit in New York State. And her confidence scores are really high. So immediately I find myself going, huh, I wonder how she's doing on restraint. Yep, you know, not so well.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So, you know, you kind of, there's certain patterns that they don't always hold up. You know, you might see somebody who's high in authenticity and high in restraint. But yeah, if you're super high in authenticity, I'm going to say, huh, how are you doing on restraint? If you're super high on confidence, like I say, not only restraint, but resonance and inclusiveness. Are you going to be, is it that maybe you're going so fast that you're not slowing down enough for people?
Right.
Or vice versa, you're really high on things like concern and resonance. So do people see you as wishy-washy and not moving things forward fast enough and low on confidence, things like that. So those are some of the things. Any patterns that any of you have noticed of things like that are starting to strike you as you learn to connect the dots between the facets?
Yeah, I think that, you know, is also adding to what you're saying there, I think that, you know, high authenticity, high integrity, high practical wisdom, high appearance, maybe lower resonance, lower humility, lower inclusiveness.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's at least one possible profile.
Yeah. And one thing I'm thinking about is, and I think this could be related to when you're thinking about, you know, selling EXPI and selling it, it's in a larger extent to companies. So with one big client that we have now, so we done the EXPI and the team process with the CEO and his team. And then afterward, they decided to cascade it to the level B. Mm-hmm. So we've done XPIs for all of them. We have a few left. But what we're able to do now for the client is so when we're with the executive HR, we're able to, you know, show them a profile of their top executives. And because what we find in this company, and I think it's that you will probably find that in other companies as well, is that these leaders tend to look very much alike. So they kind of have the same, a lot of them have the same strong sides, and a lot of them also have the same development areas. So there's only a few that are really, you know, have different profiles. And with this company, these were the one we were talking about before, where they have this launched this new strategy. And as you mentioned, Scott, so one of the, you could say like
cornerstone.
Yeah, cornerstone in the strategy is for instance creating more collaboration. And this happened to be a side that most of their executives are struggling with. So being able to help group HR in, you know, mapping their leaders. So where do we have our strength, and where would it be important for us to work with our leadership development in general if we want to succeed with this? I think that's something we found very valuable.
Hmm. Yeah, well put. Yeah, I want to encourage if anybody has any comments as well as questions, again, feel free to use that question pod or raise your hand and we can unmute you in the last few minutes here. We'd love to hear from more of you. But I think that's a good point that you're making as you described that. That's something that we run into quite frequently. And it's wonderful that we've also, the other point you're making there is when you can start with the executive leadership team, there often is a desire to kind of cascade it down. And the other way we've done it is actually have an HR leadership team all go through it. And then all of a sudden, they're our biggest internal advocates for wanting business leaders to go through it and experience it that way. So those are, sure, are two great ways to kind of spread use of it. Other thoughts you have about working with teams? Anything else you can share with us, Anna and Linda, about your team experience? Or you know, what do you think the impact was on the team of going through this process with the XPI? How did it change things for the team? You said you just got some feedback in the last day or two on it.
Well, you know, when after we did the one-on-ones, we did the galley talks like you did at the training. And what we found was that people have different strengths. So we came up with scenarios, real-time scenarios at work, and they worked together. For example, they went to the place where they had the biggest strength, and then they helped those that didn't have that as a strength. And, you know, we mixed them up. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but they got help.
I think of that as you want a, you know, complementarity there, that where people can really help each other, is the way I would think of it, for sure.
Yeah. And they did that, I think. Everybody doesn't have the same strengths, and we had a lot of sharing. Think of anything else, Sam?
That's great. All right, maybe one last question to throw at you. You know, what are some of your next steps? What are some of your plans? You've obviously all had some success with this. What are some things you hope to accomplish in the coming year in terms of, you know, as you continue to use the assessment and to build on it and do more with it, whether it's with individuals or teams?
Well, I think that what we're hoping for, and that we're in dialogue with several companies regarding having this incorporated as a part of a top talent program. So that's we haven't tried that yet, but it's work in progress, and we think that would be, you know, very, very interesting to take part in and could really, you know, accelerate people on, you know, top level talent programs.
One thing I can tell you on that front is we're now going to be into our third year already with a big, I guess you could call it, television communications company who's hired us. And this is like my dream come true in my role. They said for each cohort, they have me go through the XBI, look at the data for 15 or 20 people in a cohort, and then design a two-day program that's meant to help meet the cohort where they are in terms of strength. So in terms of a top talent program, or if you're dealing with more like a high potential group rather than a leader team, it could be a wonderful way, even though they you know, this group I'm talking about, they're from all over the country, all over the United States, but I can bring them together and say, hey guys, you know what? You guys are really doing great in so many areas, but a few developmental opportunities are authenticity, vision, and resonance. So for that group, a big component of what I built in for them was extensive work on how to tell stories, because that was really hurting them in both authenticity and vision. And they just loved that. It just seemed to meet them exactly where they were. So that's a way you can pitch it to talent people too. It's like, you know, we have a way of coming in for a top talent kind of group or a high potential group and helping you figure out where they're already strong and where we can build on strength. And are there things either collectively as a group or individually we can help them drill in on and get better at?
So that's a great input, Scott.
Yeah. Really, it's really fun to do. And it really is very satisfying for both the people buying the program and the people going through it. How about Anna, Linda, any other thoughts, final thoughts from you about some of your future goals for the rest of the year in using the assessment?
I mean, like Linda mentioned earlier, I mean, we're planning on doing with the same client two more cohorts of classes with it. And, you know, we continue to talk about it with some other clients. And, you know, now that we have a little bit more experience under our belt and can talk more explicitly about it, to do that and offer it up as, like you said, a business solution to the clients that are coming to us.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. You know, I think that everybody's looking for the edge, and that's kind of the way we frame it, is that, you know, this is what takes people that have plateaued. It's the leadership edge that takes you from being okay to being a real winner. It's the thing without, if you don't have this edge, you're not as promotable. You're not going to be as successful. And there's so many people that come to us for coaching that are sent to us, really, because it's not because they don't have the skills, they don't have the intellect, but they get some of this really wrong.
Right.
They don't look the part. They don't act the part. They don't have the confidence. They don't know when to show teeth. They don't know when to shut up. Excuse the coarseness of the remark. But it's... you know, it's a real gap out there that we found in our business up until this point. So it's a product, I think, you know, we're kind of at capacity right now, but if we were, and we may not always be, but I think it's something that would really sell if we were, you know, out there in the bushes, because it does give in this competitive world an edge.
Right. That's great. Well, one last comment from one of our attendees, Lisa Grego, said, we have just started using XPI for both our high potential program and our quote unquote top talent group. We are linking it to what is rewarded in our culture, such as getting very good at cutting through complexity, influence, and credibility. So that's another way that somebody's planning to use it among our listeners today. So on that note, we have reached the end of our time. I want to thank so much Lena and Halvor and Anna and Linda for joining us today and sharing their insights for us. As a reminder, we will be taking this recording and putting it on the content portal by the end of the week. So you'll be able to listen back to it if there's any tips you'd like to get. Also, feel free to drop me a note if anybody has any ideas or things that they'd really enjoy hearing in a future webinar. We are going to be, we've already set our dates, but we haven't set our topics for the webinars for September and December. We'd welcome your input there. But I just want to say thanks so much again to our esteemed panelists for joining us. We've all got experience. We hope to do more of this kind of thing in the future. And wherever you are in the world listening in, I want to thank you and enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Take care, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.